Hi, I'm David, and welcome to the Datasaurus Rex podcast, where we interview data visualization experts and get to know them and their data visits that little bit better. By the end, you should learn new skills and get inspired to enhance your own data viz game. And today's guest is Ken Flerlich, who is a Tableau Zen Master and also brother of Kevin Flerlich, who we had on the podcast a while back. So welcome, Ken.
Thanks, David. Good to be here.
Thanks for being on the podcast. And it's great having you here. I've seen a lot of your work and we'll see that coming up soon. But it's really inspiring to have you here. So hopefully we'll learn a lot and get inspired. So, okay, cool. So for those of you who aren't familiar with the format, for the first half of the podcast, we'll be going through one of Ken's data visualizations, asking a few questions, what inspired him, how did he go about making it, and questions like that. For those of you on the audio podcast, I will put a link to the viz in the show notes below, and I'll just describe things a little bit clearer so you know what we're looking at. And in the second half, we're going to be looking, just asking Ken just some general questions about his experience and his approach to how he does data viz. So all in all, should be good fun. And I guess let's dive in. So I'm going to bring up the data viz. And today's data viz is, it seems like a very personal topic to you, Ken. It's about the rhino poaching. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. And it was actually, this was for an Iron Viz competition 2 years ago. So it was I forget the title of the competition, but it was basically about animals and plants. This was something where I just kind of, I knew there was a problem here and really wanted to help sort of bring attention to the problem. Interestingly enough, they just had a similar data set for a Makeover Monday. So we saw a lot of really good rhino poaching visualizations that, once again, helped to kind of bring some attention to this subject.
No, that's really interesting. I have to go check those out. But I'm just really impressed with your one. It's really striking, like how creative you are. Rather than just putting a couple of numbers up on the page, you've really, like, I've looked at this in advance, and there's such a great story, and there's loads of little hidden tidbits in here. Even the sort of blood dripping down is like a reverse bar chart, which is kind of quite morbid, but also very apt for the topic, because it's a horrible thing happening to these rhinos. So I love you don't shy away from this stuff, like the actual
right. And that was the intent. I coming into that Iron Viz, I think I hadn't been using Tableau for probably less than a year at this point, and I was an avid follower of a lot of people's work. And, one person in particular who did just and continues to do amazing stuff was Johnny Walker. And he, kind of tends to do things on animals. That was a big inspiration for me, is, I kind of wanted to do a Johnny Walker style visualization, which I hadn't really done before. But to your point, it's such a, it's not a light topic, right? And I kind of made a conscious decision right up front that I wasn't going to shy away from the brutality of what's happening. What poachers are doing to these animals is very brutal. So I wanted it to be sort of in your face. I didn't want to shy away from, some graphic images and things like that. And that bar chart was, I actually probably spent more time on that bar chart than I did the entire rest of the viz itself. And I was inspired by a chart called Iraq's Bloody Toll.
Oh, I've seen that one. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That shows it's sort of an upside down bar chart that looks like blood, and it's showing, the death toll in Iraq over a number of years. So that was kind of what gave me the idea for that. And I thought, what if I take that one step further and actually make that bar chart look like real drops of blood, and kind of put it up in the right-hand corner like I did. And ultimately, it worked out pretty well, and it kind of is in your face and catches your attention, which was ultimately what the goal was.
Totally. And it's like, even if people didn't interact with it, it's still very striking from a visual point of view, but it tells a hidden story too, which is, yeah, very clever. And yeah, when you hover your mouse over, you get to see the, how many rhinos the poachers killed, right. which is, yeah, really interesting. And it's kind of declining, but should I be optimistic? Is that because things are getting better, or is that just because there's less rhinos to kill?
Yeah, that's a good question. And you know, I think part of the problem is the data that I had in there right now only goes up to, I think, 2016. So it would be interesting to revisit that, you know, 2 years later and see what the impact is. I mean, but speaking of that, I mean, if you go down a little bit further, if you go down a little bit further into there's a timeline section. I mean, there at least is some, you know, if you look at the
horn seizures
of the black rhino, I mean, that has significantly dropped in the last 100 years.
Oh, but yeah.
At least one little bit of positive news in this, and that is the white rhino. White rhino in early 1900s, there was something like less than 50 of them known in the entire world. And over the last 100 years, you know, I would assume due largely to conservation efforts, that population has been brought up to over 20,000. So, and I think today it remains around that 20,000-21,000 mark. Wow. So at least there's some positive news and some, you know, some reason to be a little bit hopeful that, you know, that the efforts of, you know, of various conservation groups are making a difference in, you know, in the rhino populations.
Yeah, totally. And it's just so chilling to look at the black rhino population. They added, you're using the size of the animal, object to like demonstrate that. And yeah, 100 years ago, 850,000, and now less than 5,000. That's shocking. And contrast just in the size of the icon too is the perfect way of doing that, I feel, because you actually see what's declining. You know, it's not just an abstract bar. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's very smart. Just for those of you who are, heard a few seconds of music too, I just happened to see the video autoplayed. So you've actually managed to embed a YouTube video, which is really cool. I remember dabbling in this a while back, but I never got it to autoplay. And I see you've kind of used some shapes to not make it just a big black box, which is really fascinating. So I haven't actually seen the video, so I'll watch it afterwards. But is this the best? Is this highlighting the issue even further, or is it showing ways we could help?
Yeah, a little bit of everything. I mean, what I wanted to do was, I was the same. I hadn't really done much with the video, and you know, again, I had seen Johnny and some other folks like Pooja and Adam who had done some really good things with video, and I wanted to do something like that as sort of just gave an introduction to the problem. So this was like a pretty good 5 or 6 minute video from an organization it's called Tipping Point. I forget the organization that created it, but just gave sort of a good introduction of what's going on, you know, so it kind of provided that introduction without me having to write it all out in text. It saved me text, allowed me to introduce the topic and then kind of get on to telling a more detailed story about specific things with data. And to your point, I didn't want just a big rectangle. I wanted to have, you know, something that just sort of fit in a little bit better. And I'd seen, I'd seen Johnny do this with just basically some images on the sides that just kind of give it a rounded look. And I thought that was just a nice little thing to do to it to make it look a little bit nicer and build into the dashboard a little bit better.
Yeah, that's really smart. Is that using one of the newer Tableau features like transparent? No, I guess not dashboards, but like, is it just a PNG?
A PNG with that just kind of, it's the corner and then it's got some transparency. So if you go up to that right hand corner and try to click on the screen, it won't actually work because there's a lot of it.
I see.
Yeah. So
cool. That's very smart. I like that. It's yeah, this is a good choice of using a video, and just again demonstrates how flexible Tableau is. So it's really, yeah, fits really well.
And the autoplay, I mean, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I think it's dependent on the browser. Now, Chrome has since made it so that videos don't necessarily autoplay. I think people were getting annoyed with all the ads that would automatically play.
Yeah.
Website. So on my browser, I've got Chrome open and it's not auto playing. But on other browsers, I know it does. And that was a trick I learned from Adam Crayon. He did something. It was one of the Viz for Social Good projects, and he didn't actually have a video, but he had background music. So as soon as you opened the Viz, it played this music that was just perfect. Just really perfect, sort of setting the tone of the Viz, I remember seeing that and thinking, oh my God, that is so amazing, and reaching out to him and asking what he did, and basically he just used a YouTube video, hit it, so that it wasn't visible on screen, and set the meg code so that it would autoplay and just created this really beautiful effect.
That's very smart. I'm actually getting flashbacks to when I was had your brother on the podcast, because we had a quick look at his Super Mario Viz, and I kept accidentally autoplaying the Super Mario music. Which was, again, great use. Like, as you chose each different version of the game, it would play the appropriate music. But again, yeah, very clever use. I'm going to have to look into that too, because I feel if used correctly, music could be a good addition to any Viz. Yeah.
Right, yeah. And I did something like that. As soon as I learned that trick from Adam, I had built this Pac-Man Viz, which basically just looked like, or sorry, it was Miss Pac-Man. It just basically looked like the video game with the dots. And the dots indicated high scores that were tracked on some high score tracking website. And I played the Miss Pac-Man music in the background, and it does have a really nice effect when it's used appropriately and not overdone.
Yeah, totally. It's got it, especially. Oh yeah, I've seen it here. I'll have to check that out later. Don't want to deafen my viewers again. Okay, that's great. So yeah, we've got a really good idea of the inspiration for the Viz. And it's really inspiring. I've learned so much looking at this, and we'll see more insights as we go through. But before we move on, there's a lot of data sources, and I wanted to ask, how did you go about collecting the data and like choosing which data points to put in?
Yeah, so that can often be a struggle for something like this, is actually trying to find the data that you want. I mean, I knew I wanted a handful of things. I wanted to know the number of rhinos that had been killed, due to over a period of time. I wanted to know, I wanted some statistics on, later on in the visit, or some statistics around, horn seizures. And then of course there's the sort of population data, and those were the sort of three key things I knew I wanted to spotlight in this. And then it was a matter of finding that data, and data like this can often be, as I said before, can often be very difficult to find. I was lucky though. After doing some Google searches, I found websites that had this data pretty readily available. There's a whole website that just tracks rhino poaching and poaching of other animals. So they had some good data and statistics for that. And it was, the data was pretty clean, so it was really easy to work with. I mean, ultimately, if you look at this, there really isn't a ton of data. I mean, it's pretty simple, straightforward data. It wasn't particularly difficult to find, and I didn't have to do a lot of cleaning, so it made my life a lot easier. I mean, certainly, in other projects, it's a lot more work, and you have to, you have to do a lot of that cleaning work. And, I will use Tableau Prep to do a lot of that sometimes, but, Tableau Prep wasn't even out at the time that I built it. It was clean data, and it just really made it easier for me to kind of focus on the design and the story.
Oh, amazing. And I think you mentioned a good point, because more data doesn't always mean better data. So I love that you've only you've only got like a few data points here, or like you've only chosen a few insights from each one. Like you haven't tried to represent every single thing or every insight. You've kind of stuck to the key ones, which ultimately add to the narrative and story you have. So it's really powerful, the ones you picked out, like the declines, the seizures of the horns. But is that, that's by customs, is that correct? Or
right, correct.
Agencies, yeah. So it's kind of, I feel conflicted. It's great it's going up because it means it's catching more illegal activity, but it also means there's a lot of activity happening. But it's
exactly,
So you've really thought about what you want to put on the screen to tell this very succinct but nicely flowing story. And it's tough. I often find it's harder to not put things on the screen than put stuff on the screen, if that makes sense. and this is a good example of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, cool. Perfect. Thank you. And I also love, this seems to be a common theme of all the other Tableau Zen masters I've been interviewing so far. And you've used a hover text icon to list out your data sources at the bottom, which I think is a great idea.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I do that a lot. I mean, it's, you know, especially when you have a lot of data sources, you know, it's if I have one or two data sources, a lot of times I'll just put that in the footer. Mm-hmm. This required a little bit more explanation. I mean, I wanted to have a little bit of detail about what the visualization is showing, and then kind of show the different sources and add some notes there, just so people have a little bit more information. I also have another icon for the images, I can get to that here in a moment, but I wanted to make sure to clearly indicate where these images came from, and give credit to the original photographers and sites that had those.
Well, I guess whilst we're talking about it, might as well keep it flowing naturally. I noticed you have embedded a gallery inside a Tableau Viz. I don't think I've seen this before, and it's a great technical feat, or like at least from what I can see. But also, it's for want of a better term, the images are quite graphic. But I feel again goes back to the point I thought you were making earlier. You're not shying away from this. It's disgusting, and it's kind of, when I first saw it, I was like, oh. But then I was actually very impressed that you're not shying away from this stuff, because those horns have got to come from somewhere, and it's
exactly. Yeah. And that, you know, it wasn't like I went out and actively sought out graphic images. I just looked for images that were truthful, you know, that were actually showing what's happening. And you're right, some of them are very graphic and hard to look at, and yet. Mm. You know, as I said before, I didn't want to shy away from that. You know, this is what's happening, and I wanted to clearly show that.
Yeah.
Back to the technique used here. So common theme of this is Johnny, Pooja, and Adam. Again, and this is another thing I learned from them. I had seen them use these sort of image carousels, I'll call them, within some of their visualizations, and it was just a great way to show off a handful of images in this sort of interactive way. So I wanted to do that with this, and reached out to Johnny and just asked him how he did that. So he referred me to this tool called, Syncopa. And it's just sort of an image, a web-based image tool. You upload your images, you select a certain type of way to lay those out, and then they provide you with the embed code. So it can be embedded in a website, or really anything that where things can be embedded. So this is just a web object, a web page object in Tableau that is linking over embedded content, and just creates this really nice interactive way of flipping through a handful of photos about what's going on, and just give you a broader picture through images.
Yeah, no, it's smart, and also it facilitates interaction. So if you want to, I'm just doing it now. If I click on one, it expands out. I can see it in more detail, and it's not just sort of a gimmicky thing. It's actually going, hey, if you want to, hey, go look at it in more in its kind of gory detail, which is, I think it's a great idea, because it's you don't want to like shove it in people's faces, but it's subtle enough, like rotating around. But then if people, it does encourage people to to then look at it in more detail. So that's a really clever idea. This is very good.
Well, I'll make a note on one of these photos. So one of them is a photo of Sudan, who was the last known male white rhino. At the time I built this, he was the last known northern white rhino male. So northern white rhinos are broke up into two different sort of subspecies, northern white rhinos and southern white rhinos. And at the time, he was the last male white northern white rhino. So that was pretty important because he was the last one who could produce offspring. It was 6 months ago, a few months ago, he just died. So the last of the last northern white rhino male has passed away. So it's probably time that subspecies is probably over time going to sort of cease to exist unless they can find ways to breed it with other species or something like that.
Oh, that's terrible. And I've got him up on screen now. He's not looking too happy. I guess being the last one around, it's not great, but that's tragic.
You can see that I believe they actually removed his horn and that's something that they'll do, that they're doing more of, is removing these rhinos' horns so that poachers do not try to attack them for the horn. It protects the animal from poachers by doing.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess it is. If it's going to get removed, it's better in a humane way. But it's still sad that has to happen, though. I can see why they've done it. Wow, interesting. I'm learning even more now exploring this. Thank you. This is a powerful viz. Okay, cool. So moving on to the next question. We've already spoken a little bit about it, but how did you approach the creation of this viz? Did you dive into the data points and see what insights there were, or did you already have a rough idea? And what was your process for approaching this?
So I think I'm maybe a little unusual. I hardly ever have a picture of what I want to build, or in a lot of times I don't even know what data I want. Sometimes I just have a basic concept, and I knew a couple things going in. I knew I wanted that sort of Johnny Walker animal visualization style. I knew it was probably going to be long form because I wanted some explanatory text and kind of wanted to build it out in that fashion. And that's kind of all I knew coming into it. The very first idea I had was that bloody bar chart. So I spent a whole bunch of time building that, and then over time just sort of added pieces to it and rearranged things. I think, there are three or four different sections, and I think they were probably all in completely different orders at some point. As it all came together, I started rearranging things to sort of better tell the story in this sort of phased way. I'm not sure how tall this thing is, but I probably resized it in Tableau 50 times, because it kept running out of space and adding space and then resizing it and adding more space. I don't ever really, hardly ever come into it with this totally complete vision of what I want. I don't draw it out. I just sit down in Tableau, pull in the data, start exploring it, seeing what insights I can find, and then start building something and going from there. And this was no exception to that.
No, that's cool. And I found with all the other podcasts, there's no right or wrong way of doing this stuff. It's all whatever feels natural. So if you're comfortable with Tableau and you can kind of play around, explore, and then start building stuff, that's a perfectly valid approach. And I find myself doing that quite a bit too, because you don't know what you don't know, right? So you kind of build stuff and then see what sticks, what looks good.
What's great about Tableau versus maybe some other tools or coding libraries. I think if you're building something that you have to write code to build, right, you have to go into that probably with a much better plan of how you're going to lay this out and what you're trying to build. So there's, that planning stage, I think, probably takes up a lot more of your time. And probably you're using other tools to wireframe it or something like that. And to me, that's probably one of the greatest things about Tableau is you can connect that data and then just start exploring it, and you can create a chart, and you can, and you know, and in seconds you can create sort of these basic charts to figure out, okay, this, I think this will work, or this chart will work. And, oh, this is something, you know, this chart gives me this, this really interesting insight. This is something I want to use. And then you can then take that and, you know, add the design and add those extra bits and pieces to really make it, you know, something that is that, that people want to look at and spend time with.
Oh yeah, no, totally. It's yeah, that's one of the reasons I like it. You just, yeah, be creative. It's free form. Yeah. You just play around. You make 10 visits, 9 are bad. You only wasted 2 minutes. Like, it's whereas right, a lot of programs. Yeah. Okay. So next question, I guess we've already got quite a few great insights, which you've been sharing as we've been looking through this viz. But if you had to pick the number one insight from this viz, what would it be? And please share it with us. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, certainly I think it's, you know, what you would expect. And that is that these numbers are going up, you know, and there are obviously reasons for us to be concerned that, that this isn't getting better. But at the same time, as I mentioned before, there are these small little pieces of hopeful information in there, such as the white rhino population coming back from, you know, near extinction in the early 1900s to, 20,000 or so. And, you know, it's not a huge number, but it's significant growth. So I think, to me, I look at this, and even though it's, you know, it's a very sad story that's being told, I think there is something positive that we can see in this, that there is an opportunity that if we continue, you know, to support these organizations that are doing work to fix this problem, that it is potentially a fixable problem. And I think that, you know, is more than just rhino populations. It's, you know, it's everything, you know, it's other populations of animals that are near extinction. It's global warming. It's all these types of things that I think, you know, they can be solved if we, you know, put our heads together and work hard to work to fix those. So I think there is an element of hope that hopefully comes out of this.
Yeah, that's perfect. And that's actually made me realize it's quite a common theme of a lot of the guests I've been having on this podcast, is a lot of they're using their data visualization skills for good. Like, we've had Kasia talking about plastic pollution in the oceans, and we had Kevin talking about drunk driving, and we've had a lot of, I guess, female superhero representation with some other visits, but they've all been really good. So it's not just using data visualization for like corporate greed. You know, it's actually, right, we're trying to use it to better society too, which is really inspiring to see.
And I think one of the challenges that we have in our, you know, is I think we often, as Tableau people, we often are kind of stuck in our bubble of Tableau. Mm. And one of the challenges we have is how to get this information outside of that bubble and share it with broader audiences. And I think, I think that's what I love so much about the Viz for Social Good project that Chloe has, that she's working with these organizations and spotlighting, things that are going on with, you know, dozens of community Viz's that people create, and that to get that message out a little bit broader. And then, of course, things like what the Tableau Foundation has done continues to do with nonprofits. I was privileged last year to have an opportunity to work with the Community Solutions, who they just gave a big grant to. And they're doing great work to help to reduce and hopefully end homelessness in the U.S. Wow. So I think there are lots of groups and organizations and projects that are trying to use data visualization to have an impact on a positive impact on the world, and more than as you said, and more than just trying to make money, right?
Yeah. No, that's perfect. And I'll put a few links to those like the Fears for Social Good and the Tableau Foundation. The links below if anyone else is interested to add their skills towards. Yeah, it's good stuff. I think that's just in general what's great about this community. It's, you know, they're just very generous with their time and skills, not just with each other, but with people in need who can't afford those kind of skills too. So, yeah, right. Really good stuff. Okay, so with this one, I was wondering what skills you may have learned or honed whilst making this viz.
Yeah, so, and I was thinking about that a little bit, and you know, there are certainly some little tricks and techniques that I learned, you know, how to do the, you know, the embed the video and do sort of the curved edges and the, you know, the embedded image carousel. You know, those are definitely new techniques that I learned in this process and have used since then. I think this was actually my first sort of real long form kind of visualization, or one of my first. So that was a real challenge for me, kind of learning that and figuring out how to make that work and how to flow in a way, in a certain way. So that was something I definitely picked up as well. But something I say about IronViz in general, you know, so this was, as I said earlier, this was less than a year after I started Tableau. This was the second IronViz feeder of that year. And I had done the first one as well. And what I really found was that just competing in these IronViz competitions, I don't know what it is exactly about them. It just really help you to up your game. I mean, you know, so when I, this was the second feeder of 2017, and I'd done the first feeder as well. And I just found that just building the vizzes for those competitions, my skills just took this huge jump from where they were before. And I don't know if it's just the nature of sort of something that's competitive or that it's something that, you know, I'm willing to put more time and effort into maybe than some of my other personal projects. Mm-hmm. It was just amazing, you know, the jump I took in competing in these couple of feeders that year from where I was before. And so I've always been big on encouraging people at all levels to jump in these competitions. You know, it's not about winning. It's about, you know, getting this opportunity to do something good and interesting. And also really it's such a great opportunity to boost your skill set in a way that you just can't, at least I personally had never been able to do without something like this competition.
Yeah, totally. It's like a lightning rod or like a focal point to like hone your skills. And at the risk of sounding cheesy, I think anyone who enters, everyone's a winner. Because like you just said, you benefit learning skills. It's kind of, yeah, it's really corny, but it's true though. It's like you shouldn't feel like you've lost if you don't win. It's you've still built this amazing, well thought out viz, which you can apply right. those skills back to your job or again, charity work and that kind of stuff. So it's, yeah. No, I like that. That's a good skill to learn. It's not all just about the technical stuff of Tableau. It's also about how you approach things. And yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. Cool. Okay, so you actually have quite a few projects, and I'll scroll through those on the screen, which is great. I find it really inspiring. But what's the next project or next big project you're working on you'd like to share with us?
You know, I've always got multiple things going at any given time. I like to stay active, and, you know, so I post the blog every 2 weeks or so. And then I'm always tinkering with things and things like that. So the newest thing, and it's not a huge one, but the newest thing I'm working on is options for different Tableau legends. So I saw a conversation on Twitter just recently where people were, you know, talking about some of the limitations of default legends within Tableau. And there are some limitations. And I think a lot of us that are, you know, really active in the community know that there are different ways that we can do legends, that we can create legends, you know, that aren't the default legends. And I realized after reading through that Twitter conversation that there's probably a lot of people that aren't active that don't understand that there are all these other different ways that you can create your legend. So that's the latest thing I'm working on is I think I'll have about 8 different alternatives for creating legends. I just posted the workbook on Tableau Public, and I'm working on the blog, and hopefully we'll have that out here in a couple of weeks. Just, you know, intended for a broader audience of Tableau users who maybe aren't as crazy about it as we are, and might gain some new skills out of that.
Oh, that's exciting. I'm going to keep an eye out for that post. I actually just went to your website too, and I've just found the eyeball viz you made. I think I said to you offline, it's gross, but I love it. It's like so smart. But these are just, for those of you who can see on the YouTube podcast, it's an amazing bit of achievement where you've managed to use
parameter actions. Yeah.
That's it. Yep.
I'll give you a little bit of background. So I had this idea about a year ago that I wanted to draw a sphere, and I thought, well, how can you draw a sphere? It's a 3D object on a two-dimensional plane. And I had done some things with, had built some 3D things, based on the work of Bora Buran. I'm not sure how you say his last name, and Anya Ahern had written a really nice blog post on 3D, and I tinkered with that. But I had this idea of, like, how could I build a sphere? And ultimately, what I was trying to do is create like a model of Saturn. Was partially successful, but I had the idea that if I could draw a bunch of spheres, and then I could just sort of stack them on top of each other. A bunch of circles, and then stack them on top of each other and make them sort of smaller, that I could create this illusion of a sphere. And that's what I did. And then after doing it, I thought, boy, it'd be cool if I just colored these spheres in different colors to create sort of this eyeball effect. So it's just ranges of, I think something like 500 circles, and each are colored slightly different to give this sort of, to make it look like an eyeball. I previously had parameters that allowed you to click on them and rotate. But then when parameter actions came out, I thought, well, I could sort of overlay a grid of points on it. And then as I move my mouse over those points, the eyeball sort of follows it around. So, that's the backstory of that.
You amazing.
Playing with weird ideas and weird things, and then leveraging, you know, these new features like parameter actions to make it more, interactive than clicking on parameters.
Amazing. No, this is, I guess, a testament to how versatile Tableau is. I love it. If you have an idea, you can often follow it through. I've definitely tested it a few times, and it's great to see that tool can do that. But also just, it's a great taster for anyone who's watching or listening of the kind of top quality content where you can learn and get inspired by going to Ken's website and following him on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. So highly recommended. Cool, exciting project. It sounds like it's one of many, but it's I've definitely benefited from having better legends inside of Tableau. So
yeah,
great. Okay, cool. So before we go into rapid fire questions, is there anything else you'd like to promote before we move on, or apart from the Rhino charity?
We mentioned the Tableau Foundation. I just want to mention there are opportunities for people to help with the foundation. So go check out their website. There's something called I forget what the name of it, but there's a volunteer sort of section where you can find ways to help these organizations or different nonprofits. So I definitely encourage people to go check that out and use your skills to, you know, help some of these people to enhance their skills or to bring more attention to their cause.
Excellent. No, that's cool. I'll put, again, links down. Everyone get on board. No, thank you for that. Okay, so we're getting into rapid fire questions because we only have about 10 minutes left. And just to make sure they are rapid fire, I'll try and keep as quiet as possible and I'll let you answer the questions. So looking back at past podcasts, I feel like I chime in, but it's all about you. So, so for this section, we're going to just fire a couple of questions at Ken, see what sticks and get some good answers. So first one is, I like to add this in, pie charts. Love them or loathe them?
Neither. You know, most of the time I think they do kind of a poor job for most use cases. But I would never say that I loathe them. I think there are every chart has, some potential use case depending, on the audience, on the data, on the story you're trying to tell. So, and I think pie charts are the same example. I was in a, I'm going to turn this into a not rapid fire question, but there's a real example of this there. I was in an art museum, that was kind of focused on the show was kind of focused on data, and, it was in Columbus. I was there with a group of other Tableau community people, including Kevin and Bridget, and Joshua Smith and a few other folks. Mm. And we this piece of art that was a big pie chart, and it had I bet 50 different slices on it, and all of our data viz best practices brains kind of explode, and we're like, oh my god, that's the worst thing ever. And then we stopped and we looked at it, and we took a minute to understand what it was, and basically it was half of the pie was one color, and then the other half was a whole bunch of other slices, the other 49 slices. And as we sought to understand what was going on, what it was showing was military spending by countries in the U.S. or around the world. And what we realized was that 50% slice was the U.S. And so we all of us sort of turned around and said, whoa, this is an amazing use of a pie chart here, because it really shows how one country's military spending dwarfs every other country in the world. It's as much as every other country. I think we just have to be very careful about bashing certain charts and saying, never use these kinds of charts, because there always are good use cases. And as I said, it all depends on, your audience and the data and the story and the insight that you're trying to share with people.
Yeah, totally. No, great answer. Right, there's a right tool for the right job, and sometimes pie chart can fit that. So that's awesome. Next question is: which publications do you follow regularly for data viz?
Yeah, so I'm always scooping up data viz books and reading whatever I can find out there. I certainly pay attention to a lot of the Tableau community blogs. I read almost anyone that I see. But there are a few people that I consistently read every single blog that they post, partially because I've learned so much from them over the years. And I just continue to learn so much from them. So people like Ryan Sleeper and Andy Kriebel and Jeffrey Schaefer, who I think you had on the podcast, right?
I did. I think he was on last week's one. So
So when they post blogs, I always read them and seek to really understand them and always learn something from them. I've also, been following the Data Visualization Society pretty closely and have joined their Slack channel. And I try to read the blogs that they post. Actually was honored to have written a blog for them just recently as well. So I follow that pretty closely. It's a really good way to kind of step outside of just the Tableau community and learn and see what other people in the visualization community are doing.
And can anyone follow that society? Is that like?
Yeah, I mean, it's for people that do this as a profession, or part of their profession. So, but yeah, anyone can join the Slack channel, and they have a number of different sub-channels or whatever you call these things in Slack. So if you're interested in historical data visualization, there's a channel for that. If you're interested in what you want something that where people can give you a feedback, there's something for that. So there's a little bit there for anybody who's interested in this topic.
Cool. That's great. Okay. I'll have to go check that one out. Nice. Next question is, what is your number one Tableau trick for Tableau newbies?
Right. So this might not be a trick. And I, if I remember, I think Jeff may have given a similar answer. But you know, the thing I like for Tableau newbies to realize is that Tableau isn't just a place where you can create charts. It isn't, you know, like you put your data in, you click on a chart and boom, you have something. You can certainly do that. But the platform is built in a way that it is sort of this, and I'll use a term that I know others have used before, and I'm not sure exactly who coined it, but it's a data-driven drawing tool. And for me, when I first discovered that I could kind of just, if I knew X and Y coordinates, that I could plot them on a scatter plot, and then I could connect them with lines, and then I could connect them to become polygons. That to me, when I learned that, opened up a whole new world of what I could do with it, because there's really no limit to it. You know, if you can figure out those X and Y coordinates, you can draw anything. And then if you can apply math to that to sort of automate the calculation of those points, you can draw curves and you know, all these crazy things like Sankey's. And, you know, so to me, you know, that's the biggest tip, is kind of understanding that, sure, you can plug in some data and choose a chart and really quickly and easily have this. But there's this whole other world of things you can do once you understand how the platform works under the covers. Yeah. And I've written, you know, I wrote a handful of blogs called Beyond Show Me that really sort of focused on that. And then last year at the conference, Matt Chambers and I did a presentation on that where we kind of introduced this concept as well. So it's something that I think is, you know, yeah, it's definitely my number one thing for newbies to know.
Cool. No, that's great. Yeah. Just not being limited or having an open mind about the tool, but also trusting from other experts that it can do the stuff which it promises, or even it's not meant to do. Yeah. Correct. Just try and break it like you've been doing. It's that's a good tip. I like that. So what is your favorite chart type?
You know, I love all charts, so it's hard for me to pick.
Fair enough.
Maybe my cop-out answer is my favorite chart is the one that best meets the goal I'm trying to accomplish, right? Hey, you know,
yeah.
Whatever that is. Certainly, you know, I'll use tons of bars and lines and maps and things like that. But I also like, you know, somewhat unusual charts. I love Sankey's when it's the right use case. Sunbursts are cool in the right use cases. I enjoy creating weird charts, whether or not, you know, just to play with the idea and the concept and see where they might work. But yeah, I don't think I have any favorite chart. Just whatever makes the most sense for the data I'm working with, that's my favorite chart.
No, that's a great answer. I think having that open-minded, flexible approach. You don't want to be known as the bar chart guy or the pie chart if it's not the right fit. It's what is it like? If you give someone if they only have a hammer, everything starts looking like a nail, right? And that's just not good for anyone. So it's I like that approach. That's a good answer. I'm going to steal that with pride. And I'm just looking, you know, just remind me very quickly, I want to promote your Sankey templates, because they're super hard to do from scratch. I often find myself looking at them going, how the heck did someone do that? But Jeff mentioned that you were going to do a post, and you've just done it from the looks of it. You've got templates where people can download the Tableau workbooks and actually see the math and the stuff behind it. So that's really generous of you. I love that you're iterating or allowing others to iterate and build upon this.
All the hard work was done by Jeff and Olivier. Catherine, I'm not saying his name right, but you know, they're the ones who kind of came up with the idea and sort of over time it developed, and I know Jeff went into this in some detail, but you know, they deserve all the credit. I just took them and sort of made them really easy for you to plug your data in and create a Sankey without thinking about all the math and the complicated stuff behind the scenes.
Nice. No, that's brilliant. So, yeah, no, thanks for that. I'm definitely going to have to make it a mission to get into Sankey's more. Again, when appropriate. Yeah. A couple more questions before we wrap up. What, other than Tableau, what other tools or software do you generally use when making data visualizations?
Yeah. So I pretty much always use PowerPoint just for, you know, whether it's you creating like a custom title with a different font, and then, you know, because Tableau doesn't support a lot of different fonts on the web, you know, I'll build something in PowerPoint and then save it as an image and use that for my title. But I also use it for creating custom icons and different types of graphics and things like that. For almost every visualization I do, I do something in PowerPoint, and then I'll use, you know, some free graphic editing tools to just kind of clean it up, take it the last step. Been using Tableau Prep a lot lately, you know, to clean up my data and prepare the data. You know, I used it in the last IronViz competition, which had some challenging data from a cleanliness standpoint. So I've been using that quite a bit to just create these automated workflows that I can just run and feed new data into and run. At work, I use a number of other tools as well. I mean, we do a lot of stuff with building out our data warehouse and data marts and things like that, and right. Prep or visualizing or reporting that data. So I use a tool called Warescape, which is a data warehouse automation tool, to do a lot of that. So a lot of different tools, but yeah. You know, certainly all very helpful and have their place in what we're doing. Yeah,
no, definitely. It's rather than you can't just be a one trick pony. There's, I guess, like with the charts, there's the right software for the job too. So it's right. Yeah, good you're applying that inside and outside of Tableau. This is good. One quick question. What was your first version of Tableau?
So I had to look back to see what that was. I believe it was 9.3. 10.0 came out shortly after, like I was probably using Tableau for 2 or 3 months when 10.0 came out. So yeah, I mean, it's not like, I think I heard some people say like 6 and 5, yeah. And it's only been 3 or so years. So,
wow.
I haven't used too many really old versions.
No, you don't want to, trust me. Yeah. But again, equally inspiring, but the amount of work you're doing and the caliber of in 3 years is, again, super inspiring. So I think a lot of people might see your work or others and go, oh, I've got to spend 10 years learning all this stuff. But if you've done it in like 3, that's anyway. Yeah, that's brilliant. Love it. Okay. So you briefly touched upon it, but what would be the one feature you'd like to see Tableau implement, which they haven't already?
Yeah. So I'm going to steal Jeff's answer. I think Jeff had the same answer here. I think I'm going to steal that one again. And just like to see greater font support, you know, whether it's web fonts or something like that, to where we can, you know, so that I don't have to build these titles and PowerPoint and bring them in as images, but more importantly, you know, they could just use different fonts within text space areas. I think, you know, and tooltips and all those things, I think that would open up a lot of possibilities. So that's definitely something I would like to see. But I also just kind of want to say that, you know, I have so much respect for the Tableau development team. I mean, they don't just kind of give us what we're asking for. They give us some new feature that allows us to do that thing and so much more. And I think Set Actions was a really good example, which came out in 2018.3. I mean, there was nobody in the community, probably not one person who said, I want Set Actions, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because nobody even really kind of understood what that could even mean, right? But then it came out, they had the foresight to create it, and it came out. And then there was this explosion of innovation of different things that you could do, use this tool with. So, you know, I almost, to some degree, sort of defer to the expertise of the dev team, because they almost know what we need better than what we think we want, right?
Yeah.
So instead of, you know, just giving us, you know, this functionality and this functionality and this functionality, they create this sort of big new feature that allows you to do that and so much more. And so I'll let them make the decisions and I'll just use them to the best of my ability once they come out.
No, that's a great feature request and also a great point about the Tableau devs. Like they've got a lot of skilled people and sometimes they know what's best for us, even if we don't know. So that's a very good point to take away, which makes looking forward to each new release and especially devs on stage at the Tableau conferences. A previous comment you made when you said you were resizing your Rhino Viz made me think about another feature request, which I haven't seen yet, but like when you resize a canvas, currently Tableau auto fits or rescales everything, which can be very frustrating when you're like, maybe you lined everything up. And I was just thinking, would you also like to see maybe a resized canvas, but not image per se, using Photoshop terms, like that kind of feature where if you add 200 pixels below, it just adds blank space, not resizes everything?
Yeah, I would love that. I don't use Photoshop. I use a free tool called paint.net. Mm-hmm. And you know, I just want to add some space to the top or the left. I can do that, and I can choose, you know, does it add to all to the right, or does it add to the left, or does it kind of just, you know, so I have all those kind of capabilities. And it, you know, and I did mention this with the Rhino Viz that I kept resizing it. And then every time I did that, I had to go back and resize every floating element. And it's really, really painful. So something like that. I'm sure there's an idea out there on the Tableau forums for this, but it, you know, something like that would be really helpful and it would save us a lot of time. But I did discover recently, I forget what I was creating, but I had a need. I was right to the end, and I had this huge, I think it was about 10,000 pixels high. I'm just gonna add a little bit more to the bottom, and I had dozens and dozens of floating elements, and
oh no.
Want to have to do that. So I went out and did some research, and I found on the forums that somebody had created just a little VB script thing that you could pass in your workbook. You could tell it how big you wanted the canvas to be, and it would just sort of basically edited the XML and outputted it, and it worked perfectly and saved me probably a couple of hours of over. So I'll dig that up and send it to you, and you can in the podcast notes.
That's amazing. I'd love to share that. It's going to save me lots of hours too, because it sometimes became quite prohibitive. Like I'd actually maybe second guess, like, do I actually want to add the extra thing, expand it now? Because it's just going to have to resize everything. So yeah, that's a game changer. So yeah, I'd love, if you can find it, I'll definitely pop it in the links below and use it myself. Thank you. Okay, so we've actually reached the end of the podcast. So just like to thank Ken for his time. It's been really great having you on the show, and I've learned a lot personally, and I hope the listeners and viewers have too. Before we head off, is there anything else you'd like to maybe mention or say?
No, I think we've covered it. But thank you for having me, David. I really appreciate it.
Excellent. Yeah, you're very welcome. So that's it for today's episode, and thanks for listening. Be sure to check out the show notes for everything we've covered today. And if you're new to the podcast, consider subscribing to stay up to date on all the latest episodes. Also visit datasaurus-rex.com/welcome to see all the other data visualization content we have to help you out. Until the next time, thank you very much.